What would you say happiness looks like? Some may point to a person who looks relaxed or content, while others would say it's someone who's smiling or laughing. It's no secret that on any given day, humans feel a wide variety of emotions. While they're present in nearly every aspect of our lives, Andrew Ortoni says we still don't know much about them. Ortoni is a professor emeritus of psychology, education, and computer science at Northwestern University and has been researching emotions since the 1980s. He says a lot of the discussions are opinion-based because researchers can't agree on any one theory about what emotions exactly are. However, we do know that they help us navigate our daily lives.
They help organisms manage the vicissitudes of everyday life. They help them deal with problems which they're confronted. Emotions help them learn from experience what's beneficial, what's potentially harmful, what's helpful, and so on.
This explanation is based around one of the most prominent theories at the moment, called appraisal theory. It's the idea that we're constantly assessing the world around us and responding to it through our emotions. Ortoni believes that emotions are our reactions to the psychologically important situations we encounter.
They can be real-world things or they can be memories. They can be generated externally or internally. But they're things that we're processing that are important to us. Put another way, if you don't care about something, you're not going to have an emotional reaction to it. Emotion presupposes caring in the sense of this matters to me. You know, this impinges on my goals and my interests and my concerns in some way, or at least I see it as so impinging.
While appraisal theory is well accepted by scientists, there are still some critics. A popular debate is whether all humans have a main set of basic emotions. Many researchers say yes, but there's still been no consensus on what these emotions are.
When you say to them, well, what are your criteria for something being a basic emotion? They'll either say, well, it's obvious, anger, fear, happiness, sadness, and maybe a couple of others. But again, when you look at the field, the number of proposed basic emotions amongst basic emotion theorists ranges from about 2 to 30 or more. So again, they kind of, in one sense, they don't agree as to what they're talking about. My claim is they don't even know what they're talking about.
The debate even hits on seemingly simple feelings. For example, some scientists believe hunger and thirst are emotions, while others like Ortoni think they're completely separate sensations.
I had a long argument, probably 30 years ago, with a Nobel laureate who insisted that hunger was an emotion. So what are you going to do? I mean, who's going to be the arbiter of a disagreement like that? I mean, I was astounded. I thought, my God, this guy's got a Nobel Prize. And from my perspective, he didn't know what he was talking about. And from his perspective, I didn't know what I was talking about. And I mean, I don't have any more entitlement to say I'm right than he does to say that he's right. So that's just an example of what I mean when I say, you know, it's a field that is characterized as much by sets of opinions than by actual facts.
And even if Ortoni's colleagues continue this battle over basic emotions, he says it doesn't really matter because it won't help advance our understanding of emotions, what they do, how they help us, or why we even have them. But with appraisal theory, Ortoni argues a potential answer to those questions. He believes our emotions are a direct and instant response to our perception of the world around us, rather than the reality. With that being said, can we change how our minds automatically respond? Ortoni doesn't seem to think so. He believes we're all born with our own unique emotional baseline. Just like how we all differ in height, our emotional capacity does too.
Clearly, to some extent, one can learn just by using tricks like, you know, count to 10 before you react. But they're tricks, and those are tricks to overcome a natural response. I mean, you've probably encountered people that we call sort of flat affect people, people where they never seem to react to anything, either positively or negatively. Okay, and then there are other people that the slightest little thing sets them off. I mean, walking cases of extreme emotional people. Doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative, their reactions always seem to be excessive and intense. I think these are just individual differences. There probably is to something one can do to some degree, but still you're trying to overcome these natural innate personality characteristics. Again, this is opinion, not fact.
An opinion that Nadine Levitt challenges. She's the author of children's books and social-emotional learning curricula called My Mama Says Inside Me Lives a Village. Her program teaches kids how to understand and regulate their emotions in order to foster their emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence, I think, comes in three levels. The first level is, can you identify emotions in yourself and other people? And that's the sort of the basics. The second level is, can you separate out your emotional responses from your thought patterns and behavior? So I don't think you can control your emotional responses. So you're going to feel angry or happy or any of those kinds of emotions. But you can control the way you think about them and the way you behave.
For example, Levitt says it's okay to feel angry, but it's not okay to punch someone as a response. She believes the third level of emotional intelligence is being able to recognize all of your feelings at any given time and then understand what they're trying to tell you. Ortoni says this final skill will allow you to respond more rationally in daily situations.
We sometimes say of ourselves, I'm really upset right now. I probably shouldn't make an important decision. Now, a person who's high on emotional intelligence is going to think that way. They're going to be aware of the fact that their emotional state is going to interfere with their judgment. People who are low on emotional intelligence are insensitive to things of that kind.
And though Ortoni thinks a person's natural emotional intelligence cannot drastically change, Levitt believes it's something that not only can be taught, but becomes more natural over time.
The more that you practice it, it's just a habit. It's just a skill like anything else that you learn. There's a literacy piece to it, obviously, being able to understand how emotions feel, understand how emotions look in ourselves and other people. And that's just an awareness, right? The more we can start to point that out, the better the habits become.
Levitt says the feeling of different emotions can change depending on our situation. Feeling happy when you're about to ride a roller coaster is usually coupled with nervousness and excitement. However, that happiness looks different when you're on the couch with a bowl of popcorn watching your favorite movie. As Levitt researched these variations, she realized emotional intelligence was more important than she'd thought.
I realized that emotional processing is such a huge foundational skill for success in anything from academic achievement, professional achievement, to relationship building, to responsible decision making, self-awareness, social awareness, all of it. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't really talk about emotions in this way. You know, traditionally, I think we get taught about emotions one at a time. So this is happy, you know, a big smiley face. You know, this is sad, and it's a big frown. And the problem with that is they never show up for us like that. So it's really sort of like, it's almost like a caricature of an emotion. And if we're asking kids to identify emotions in themselves and other people, I think we have to start thinking about them in a three-dimensional way and thinking about them as, you know, they come to us in groups and they influence each other.
But what happens when you don't process emotions? Many of us know the feeling of ignoring certain sensations in the hopes they'll magically disappear. Unfortunately, Levitt has firsthand experience of why that doesn't work. She was in law school about to take her bar exam when a family crisis hit.
My mom was super sick and sort of in and out of hospital for a good part of a year. And at one point it looked like, you know, it was going to go south and that she was going to probably not make it. And at the time I was sort of not going to process those emotions. I kept thinking to myself, I have to soldier on, I have to be strong, I'm not going to cry. And the reason for that was just I was scared that I would break down and not be able to do any of my bar exam. I wouldn't be able to focus on things. And so I just sort of ignored it and repressed it. And then ended up with 17 stomach ulcers.
Levitt says she's the poster child of what can happen when you refuse to process your emotions. Her curriculum teaches kids to think of their feelings like messengers. These messengers take their jobs seriously, so if they can't get your attention the usual way, they'll adjust their delivering strategy.
So you're going to start saying things like, maybe I'll get louder or bigger somehow, or make bigger movements so they'll notice me. Or maybe I'm going to call a few more of my friends to get their attention. And maybe I'll just go really quiet and sneak up on them and suddenly explode in their face and then they have to pay attention.
All in the name of getting our attention. Levitt says that we need to take time to process each emotion without distraction, even if it's just for a minute. Science has proven that even with billions of neurons, we can't multitask. So thinking we can handle multiple emotions at once can lead to many more problems.
The concept that emotions can hijack us is exactly that, that these big, big emotions, they come into the hippocampus of our brain and they're trying to be processed. And they literally, that's when overwhelm and things like that, they shut out all ability for anyone to be able to come out of the waiting room and into the hippocampus. And so I don't know if anyone's ever, you know, if you've ever felt grief or overwhelm and things like that, but you can read the same sentence 30 times and nothing will come in.
Which is why Levitt says emotional awareness is critical for developing high emotional intelligence. She admits she can get drawn into checking things off of a list and going through the motions of life, but she says the problem with living that way is that it doesn't allow us to truly be aware of our senses.
How often do we, for example, walk and really think about every step and every experience that we're having as we take each step? Or when we're eating, you know, like, so can we really taste every ingredient? No, I usually wolf it down and then go on to the next thing, right? So it's about thinking, it's just about creating habits and rituals for yourself where you check in with how you're feeling about certain things.
While there's still conflicting research surrounding emotions, that doesn't mean that humans are powerless. You can still learn how to regulate your emotions and better control how you respond to any given situation. To help in this journey, Levitt offers a free quiz for you to check in with your own feelings. It's on her website, emotionwonderland.com. And for more information about Ortoni's research, the second edition of his book, The Cognitive Structure of Emotions, is available now. It's co-authored by Gerald Klor and Alan Collins. You can find more information about Nadine Levitt, Andrew Ortoni, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. I'm Reed Pence. Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal...
I'm sure you've heard of it. I'm sure you've heard of people who sit on airplanes for long periods of time who could be at risk for forming blood clots. We're seeing that more and more in esport players as young as the age of 12 years old.
The surprising injury risks of internet gaming.
Then childhood vaccination rates have been on a decline since the pandemic.
They just recently announced that there was an individual who was diagnosed with polio. That's the first time that we've seen polio that's been transmitted within the United States in over 30 years.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.
I'm Nancy Benson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
You thought that a particular child was going to break down in tears because they really were very close to Grandpa Paul. But it turns out that they just look at you kind of mute and then say, can we have mac and cheese for lunch?
The difficult conversations we have in life. Then.
Athletes, for sure, like at a Power 5 conference school where they are known, they probably want to maintain a certain image and they don't want to appear weak.
Understanding the mental illness epidemic that's plaguing collegiate sports teams. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.